What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of News You Can Use. I am the host of this program, Anne Baldwin, and I am so pleased to have back on this program a good friend of the show, whether it was the original show that we started here, whether it was a connection, and now here we are with News You Can Use, and I figured who better to get back on the show than my good buddy, Daryl McGraw. Good morning, Daryl.
Yeah, what's up, Ann? How you doing? It's always a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure. You know, I got to tell you, when you say, how am I doing, I got to admit to you and to the audience, I get a little nervous in November and December. I don't know why, but in my recovery, these are the two hardest months for me. I don't know if it's the time change, if it's, you know, that it's getting darker earlier, if it's getting colder. But I get a little bit on edge, and I really got to pay attention to things, especially these next couple of months. So that's my goal right now, is to just stay straight, stay focused, and keep it going.
No, I hear you. A lot of people don't like this because the tension comes up of getting family members together. And those of us that have been in long-term recovery, like myself and you, right, me being in recovery since May 7, 2007, right? I think about getting together with family members and, you know, that brings in a lot of tension. But a lot of times family members, just for me and what I've heard from friends, is that like family members that maybe not in the same spaces that we are, tend to try not to forget what they like to remind us, I should say, of where we came from and not where we are presently. Mm-hmm. You know, I got a guy that comes over every Thanksgiving, eats my turkey in my house. I've been in recovery for quite some time now, and he still likes to remind me, oh, man, good thing you stopped smoking that crack. And, you know, and for a while that used to, like, kind of knock me off edge a little bit. But today I understand that's where he's at, and he needs that for whatever reason. Like, you know, we have people that, you know, that need to kind of remind themselves of where we were and not where we are. I don't know why, but I think that a lot of that stuff, a lot of those ugly memories come up. For especially people that were that are in recovery, that may have did things that they weren't so proud of, we still got people that like to remind us.
Oh, yes, we do.
You know, or just like to, you know, go down memory lane. I go down south a lot of times.
Well, like, they can go down. They can go down memory lane, but I don't have a lot of memory of the lane I was going down. So,
right. Yeah. Oh, they like to remind you that, yo, you don't remember you put that lampshade on your head. And every year we get together, you remind me of that.
Oh, that's so funny. So, yeah. Well, I kind of skipped ahead, Daryl. I just want people to know, you know, if you haven't tuned in when Daryl McGraw was on this program, he's got so many different certifications. He is a certified criminal justice addiction professional, also has a state certificate as an addictions counselor, recovery support specialist, criminal justice professional. I mean, you do so many different things, and I hope I didn't leave out anything very important. But, you know, you've worked with folks at Yale University and their Department of Psychiatry, just so many different roles that you've had just because of your experience. But, you know, I don't want to be that friend that eats your turkey, but let's back up a little bit and tell people where you came from, Daryl, because I think that that's really important for people to have a perspective on where you were and where you're at today.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I really appreciate it. You know, I grew up in Stanford on the west side, and, you know, the west side of Stanford, and, you know, I struggled with addiction for about 25 years, and I spent 10 years of my life cycling in and out of the correction system on what I call today the installment plan, right? So that meant I go to jail for a couple of years, get out, go back and make sure the food is still gross and so on and so forth. But the last time I was incarcerated was May 7, 2007. And I was, you know, I went to prison, drug-related, you know, I got pulled over, DWB, driving while black. And, that thing led to me being choked and tased on the side of the road by a police officer. And, you know, even though the circumstances for the pullover wasn't, you know, legit, I'll say, it was a time that changed my life. And I went to prison in May 7, 2007 and was released in 2010 with 5 notebooks, which today I call my reentry plan, my roadmap to reentry and recovery. And, you know, and I got out with a GED. And today I, you know, you and I have been friends for a long time. As you said, I worked at Yale University. I've also was the director of the Office of Recovery Community Affairs for the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services here in Connecticut. I started my own organization called Formerly Inc., where I do consulting and technical assistance, and I speak around the country. I do a lot of inspirational speaks, talks around recovery and trauma and urban trauma. And I also, lately, have been doing more and more talks about racial equity and inclusion. You know, we've had a lot of disconnect over the years. I mean, things have been getting a lot of, like, right in your face when it comes to racism. And we need to have these conversations more and more in our communities. So, and when we do have those conversations, we start to see that we have a lot more in common than we do uncommon. If we do, like, we don't have in common. You know what I mean?
I do.
So just doing stuff like that. I've been very blessed to, you know, travel all over the country and do things. But it started out with a wicked crack addiction. You know, I stole from my mom. I did all the things that many, many other people that are struggling today in addiction has done. I did all those things that I'm not proud of. But today, you know, I stand here a proud dad of 3 kids. My son's in a really good school in New Jersey, playing basketball. I have a daughter that's seeking to be, like, she's 22. She wants to be Instagram famous, and she's trying to be an entrepreneur. And then I have my youngest, who is currently in high school hopefully to pursue an up career in being a doctor. I say all that to say that due to the choices that I've made within the last 14 years of my recovery has changed the trajectory for those, my family and many others. I can, you know me, and you go back. So I could tell you many stories of lives that I've impacted by just telling my story.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it takes, is for people to see the real mm-hmm. face and hear the voice of people who have made mistakes, but learn from those mistakes. And I'm so glad, Daryl, to hear that your family is doing well, because, you know, not only is the addiction tough on the individual, but it's also, I think, more tough on the family and the people around that individual, because, you know, you don't always know what's going on. I think that you're in mm-hmm. that cloud, but everybody else sees the reality of the destruction and, boy, the hurt and harm. And like you mentioned before, the guy that comes over to your house and eats the turkey and reminds you of how bad it was. And I think sometimes maybe that's not an intentional, you know, jab at mm-hmm. our recovery. For example, my mother was just out here visiting from Florida, so I don't see her that often. And my kids all live, you know, in other states. So mm-hmm. for them, it's still fresh. It's still new, even though it's been 11 years, right? They still, they worry. They worry because they know for me, one drink can take me right back where I was. So I understand that concern, and I think the only thing that we can do is just, you know, do the best we can and keep remembering how bad it can be and look at the future as a bright future if we just, you know, stay straight. So those are great words of inspiration. Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Daryl McGraw, and we should also mention you've got your master's degree. Wow.
Yeah, I got my master's degree in organizational management and leadership, and, you know, for me, like even that trajectory, like you said, like, you know, you know, with the whole family thing, and, you know, and I'm sure there are family members here, and I'm hoping that, you know, we went from dope dealers to hope dealers, right?
Yep.
So I'm hoping that, you know, this is inspiring that, you know, I remember I got 14 years of not using substances, no drink or no drugs or any mind altering substances. But I remember when I couldn't get 14 minutes, and we heard mm-hmm. a lot of people. You know, hurt a lot of people, hurt, I mean, my mom, you know, watching me and money and promises, and they're all wondering. And so sometimes they are a little raw and still wondering when the other shoe is going to drop. You know, I remember my daughter was 14 And I had cycled in and out of the correctional system so much in her life that when she was born, when she was born, I was in jail. I got out. I went back to jail. So I had cycled in and out of her life. By the time she was 14, that she was old enough and smart enough to say, "You've only known me 7 years."
Right.
Right. And she was 14. Mm. So that really resonated with me. But I wish I could tell you that was enough to make me stop using substances, but it wasn't. And, you know, so I had to make some changes and some choices. Right. I had to, you know, and I love to tell you this part that, you know, when I was incarcerated, May 7, 2007, and I was on that journey, somebody slipped the Purpose Driven Life book under my door. And it was a 40-day spiritual journey. And I read that book in 40 days, right? Each chapter for 40 days. And through that process, I had found purpose. And that purpose was to use my story as a tool to help others find, you know, find freedom, right? Mm-hmm. From addiction, from all these other things, right? And, you know, I always say that you and I and many of my other friends are on the modern-day Underground Railroad. And we're pulling people out of darkness, man, because, you know, one of the worst prisons, I was in a physical prison, but I tell you, addiction is that mental prison that is worse, 10 times worse than, at least in a cell, they close the door, you know you're locked up. But when you're out in a free world and still feel like you're confined to something, confined, chained to this addiction, and it's telling you what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, mm-hmm. that prison's like no other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Boy, you just said it so well. And, you know, and there is hope for folks out there who may be listening or who know someone, you know, and I see on your social media too, Daryl, you're always trying to find a bed for somebody or help mm-hmm. somebody get into detox. And I think that's what we do. That's part of the giving back,
yeah.
you know, is trying to help those folks that are struggling. But there is help out there. And that's the good news. I know back in, yeah. you know, 11 years ago, I don't think there were as many resources, but I know now that there are. So there's no reason that you can't find the help that you need. So let's kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about this racial equality conversation. Mm-hmm. And I want to share with you something that happened to me last week. So I went to Job Lot over in Bloomfield, and I was checking out, and I was getting a scarf that had no price tag on it. So they had to do a price check. Well, the woman behind me went nuts and just started, you know, saying racial slurs and swearing at me and just got got belligerent. And I got to tell you, this isn't the first time that's happened to me there. Here I am just trying to mind my own business, right? So knowing me, I couldn't let that go. So I just had to say something to her like, you know, why are you acting like that? And she had this sweatshirt on it that said Angel. And I said, first of all, you should not be wearing that sweatshirt. Ma'am, you should not be wearing that sweatshirt because you really are not an angel right now. And I actually had a sweatshirt on with a witch on it. Said, yes, I can drive a stick. It's kind of, you know, like a stick shift. Said, actually, you should be wearing my sweatshirt because you're acting like a witch right now. I mean, we had this whole, mm-hmm. but, you know, I was kind of saying it tongue in cheek. But, you know, for me, I just couldn't let this thing go. Now, that impacts me. That impacts the way that I look at people, you know, for the rest of the mm-hmm. day, if not beyond that. So, I mean, you know, I know that you talk about trying to get along, trying to understand each other. But will it ever happen? Do you think we're making any progress in that direction?
No, I think that, yeah, absolutely. We are. You know, I do a lot of, I just did anti-oppression training the other day. And I think that first I have to say that we've all been lied to, right? Like, you know, or there's been a disservice with the educational system. I feel like if we go back and think of your schooling and my schooling, right? When we go back to school, if the teachers taught us about the contributions of black and brown people, honestly told us that, you know, there were black and brown inventors, doctors. Like, if you really understand the contribution that black and brown people made to this country instead of the half history that we heard, then we'd have a different respect for each other and their contributions. You would be like, wow, these people contributed heavily to this country. But because we didn't, and then the narrative is that these individuals are lazy or they're this or they're that, and then there's this point that we talk a lot about that people are hearing more and more of white privilege. And that privilege is not that you come from a wealthy family or things are, you know, were easy for you by no means. But what it means is that we all struggle in this country, whether we're poor or rich. We all have problems. People die. People get cancer. All this stuff happens. But your color of your skin is not another on top of all those things that happen in natural life. See, people are discriminated against based off of the color of their skin. And I'll just give you this analogy that I use a lot, is if you picture an iceberg, when you see an iceberg, you see that piece of the iceberg sticking out, and you only see that, and that's above the waterline. And that's what a lot of people judge. That lady that was in the line was judging you based off above the waterline. But if she knew you below the waterline, that she would understand that you're a very nice person, that you're one of my closest friends, that you are a radio host, that you do things, that you give your personal recovery. There's so much below the waterline, but we never get to learn that part about a person. So through the years and decades in this country, we've been judging people, and fear has been based off of this everything above the waterline. And until we're willing to have conversations and get to know people and understand that those narratives that have been put out there for decades are wrong. Now, are there some people like the lady possibly in the line? I don't know her, but are there some people that may never change? Are there some people that are racist because or what have you? Absolutely, on both sides of the track.
Right.
But there are many, I come in contact with more and more people who just are, respect human beings and love each other for who we are, and that's it. But the narrative is that we are at war all the time. Blacks and whites don't like each other for these reasons. A lot of the reasons that we don't like each other are a lot of based above the waterline or false narratives that keep getting cycled through the media.
Right. No, I agree. And, you know, I don't know what it is, but I've seen a significant change just as a consumer, right? Mm-hmm. I've noticed that a lot of television commercials now feature people of color. I know mm-hmm. that a lot of the television stations have moved people of color into more prominent positions on mm-hmm. the broadcast, mm-hmm. whether it's the anchor desk or out in the field reporting. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the thought process behind that? How does that help?
Well, what happens is we started to highlight this now all around the world in corporations, which everybody wants to talk about racial equity and inclusion and diversity, and people want to be politically correct, and you want to do so. And some organizations are doing this authentically, right? They're saying that they're starting to realize that here we have this multi-billion-dollar corporation, and we have no black and brown people in leadership roles. Why? Because we just, and that doesn't make sense. And the successful organizations know that you need multitudes of different opinions and lenses at the top so you can market to everyone, right? But if you only have a certain group of people in the leadership roles, then your lens is only looking at one thing. And it's all like, we can't, like, you know, so the lens is that way. So what we're starting to see is some people, you know, are trying to look like they're doing the right thing. But I would say that sometimes it's done, you know, it's not authentic, right?
Right.
And other times it's intentional. But the one thing that I'll say, the fact that you're noticing it now, like, I would never notice that there are more white people on TV. Were you noticing it shows that there has been a lack thereof. People of color on TV, you're starting to notice that there's more.
Right. Well, but you know what I think is, and, you know, I don't think I'm alone in this, but what I think is almost amusing is I challenge anybody out there listening to watch television commercials now. And I mm-hmm. bet you big money that in the majority of commercials that you see, you're going to see the Asian person all in one 30-second mm-hmm. spot. You're going to see the Asian person. You're going to see the white person. You're going to see the Hispanic person. You're going to see the African-American person. And all of a sudden, you know, they're picnicking together in their neighbor's backyard. Now, to me, that's overkill. That doesn't happen. It's not realistic. Right. And it's almost an overstretch trying to make everybody happy. So, you know, I think there's two sides to this. It just doesn't work.
It has to look natural, but I will also say when we're talking about the media, and I do this presentation that you and I, you should see some of these things, the media has done a disservice to making things look inclusive. So a lot of times you'll see the unhealthy food ads will have people of color, like the fast food restaurants. And like, you know, we just had this whole thing about Popeye's chicken. If you go online and look at the Popeye's chicken, you don't see any white people saying, oh, this chicken is so good. You don't see that. Right? So they're marketing and targeting this group of people who already have health issues. They already have high blood pressure and diabetes and all these things, yet they're marketing this chicken like this is the best thing you ever had, right?
But you know what, Daryl, it is pretty good.
It is. Oh, you see my Facebook page. I have one or two. But I'm talking about the marketing aspect.
Yeah.
But then when you start to see, like, healthy commercials, you don't see the black and brown people. What you see is white people seeking that. And that's the thing, like, where you see, like, the really nice cars or the and so now they have to kind of change their game and their messaging because, you know, but and it's crazy. TV media is probably one of the worst things that we have, you know, to lead us into inclusion and diversity because it's all in who's in charge. You know, it's all in who's in charge. And it was interesting that I was watching something the other day and they were talking about, like, particular news media and certain language that they use. And then they peeled the onion back and that particular, those particular news stations were all owned by, like, the Sinclair family or something.
Mm-hmm.
So their messaging was all the same. It was like 90 different channels. You can see it on YouTube. Check it out.
Yeah,
I challenge you to check it out, and it's all the same messaging, and it's interesting. I'll say this one other thing is, like, my mom, say she watches like, MSNBC, yeah, you know that, right?
MSNBC.
She doesn't watch Fox News. Mm-hmm. She doesn't watch Fox News, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she's watching that, and then I go to my friend's house who's watching Fox News. Same news article. The delivery and what they're saying is exactly opposite.
Right.
So we got to stop falling for the banana in the tailpipe. You know, we got to stop that. And we got to do a part two. This is some good stuff.
All right. So I'm just going to kind of, is there a place you want people to go to learn more or to contact you for your speeches?
We're leading people out of darkness, you know, and bringing them on the Underground Railroad. I mean, today, the modern day Underground Railroad. So I'm on Instagram, Harry Tubman 18 on IG. I'm Daryl McGraw on Facebook. And follow the show. Follow us.
Follow us.
We'll have this conversation. Yeah, we'll have this. We want to have more dialogue and really get into this.
Sorry, I would love that.
You know, you're developing more, but
absolutely, yeah. You're always a great guy to talk to, Daryl McGraw. I admire you, and you do have to check this guy out on Facebook because he's also a foodie, and we get to see that, and we get to see some of the travels and some of the great places that you're going, spreading your words of sobriety and inspiration. So, Daryl McGraw, absolutely. I can't thank you enough for being here today.
Oh, my friends, to the end, and you know, food is freedom. Food is freedom. So follow me, and I'll see you soon, my friend.
I hope so. And of course, we couldn't do this and wouldn't be here without you. All of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.